America. It's The Weekend with Joe Pags. To talk to Joe, call 800-501-7080. And now, The Weekend. Here's Joe Pags.
Great radio stations across the land, joepags.com, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, email, it's all right there also. The Blaze Radio Network, glad to have you along for the ride. It's The Weekend with Joe Pags. I really do appreciate you. Man, big week, right? Huge week. We had the House of Representatives finally, after being guilted by many senators, march the articles of impeachment over to the United States Senate. They literally marched it over. Well, I mean, Jerry Nadler waddled it over. You ever notice this guy waddles? Kind of a waddler, right? Got a Pags parody on that coming up. Also a Pags parody on your boy Soleimani. The left all freaked out when the president decided, I'm going to take decisive action and take out this guy, Qasem Soleimani. He was a terrorist, a guy who killed over 600 Americans, a guy who masterminded the attempted takeover of our embassy in Iraq, was in Baghdad when he was killed, not in his home country of Iran. What was he doing there? A guy who, according to the media out of Iran, because our media won't say it, was behind the killings of 1,500 to 1,600 Iranians who dared hit the streets and say, we want freedom, we want liberty. That's what happens in Iran when you tell them that you want freedom and liberty. He was taken out, dead as a doornail. And the left, they were calling him Elvis. We just killed their Elvis. Called him a head of state. Called him a foreign dignitary. Called him a foreign leader. And actually attacked our president for taking this guy out. Very, very strange to see people who are Americans, many of them representing other Americans in Congress, pretending that this guy was somehow a choir boy and should have been left alone. And he can go and he can mastermind and plan any dastardly deed he wants in Iraq. Who are we to take him out? By the way, we were responding to the fact that he just killed an American contractor and injured several others in that attack on the embassy. That, I guess, didn't matter. So we took that guy out. On this program today, I'll have a woman named Erica Kasrai. She's from Iran. She did a video. She's an American now. She did a video explaining the truth about Iran. It's gotten 5 or 6 million views on YouTube. I'll have her on to explain just how bad this guy Soleimani was. And, of course, we'll focus on the idiots from the left marching the articles of impeachment over to the House of Representatives, or to the Senate, from the House of Representatives. But we're going to talk about that. And it turns out they might have waited a month because they were waiting for their special pens to show up. That might have been what happened. They were waiting for their special pens to show up, so they waited a month. Could be. You know, because they didn't have just like a Bic pen where they were upset that they had to even do it because it was horrible. It was a horrible day. They were in mourning for our country. But it turns out they had monogrammed pens, special pens, cost a bunch of money, so they could all sign the articles and then save the pens for some sort of legacy or something. This is how dumb they are. Their legacy is going to be how stupid this whole thing was. What a sham this whole thing was. Their entire legacy will be what Al Green said, the representative from Houston. The impeachment process started while he was running for president. At least Al Green was honest about it. 1-800-501-7080. 1-800-501-7080. I want to hear from you on this very strange walk of the articles of impeachment from the House to the Senate. Of course, in 1998, when the Republicans did it, they just handed them over. It was like a picture. No, in 2020, you've got to march around the Capitol, waddle, as Jerry Nadler did, and then deliver the articles of impeachment after having been signed with your special pen that you waited a month to get. Oh, yes. The trial's going to start next week. It's not going to go well for the Democrats. It's going to make them look really, really stupid. Kenneth Starr, the former independent counsel on the Clinton impeachment, he's on the Trump team now, as is Alan Dershowitz. But back to Soleimani for a second. You know me, I like to do these dumb songs. I call them Pags parodies. And somebody suggested that I do an Italian traditional song because it seemed to fit right in. Soleimani, oh Soleimani. But instead of using the Italian song, I use the Elvis adaptation of the Italian song, which is It's Now or Never. It's based on Oh Sole Mio. Here's the Pags parody, Oh Soleimani.
Ooh.
That's what I bring for you people on the weekend. Let's go.
Oh Soleimani.
You're welcome.
You were so bad. Does mourn you, you disgusting killer, Omar and Bernie, say you were a pillar, you spent a lifetime waiting for the right time to attack us, that's why it's just you're dead.
That's how you get it done. Oh, Soleimani, a Pags parody for you. And what I said in the song, yes, it's really what the left has been doing in this country. They've been mourning this guy as if he was some sort of a world leader and the president assassinated him. Now, 2,800 times, then President Obama used his power as the executive, as the commander-in-chief, and he took action, shooting things down, killing people. What about when he stormed into Libya and took out Muammar Gaddafi because he can? I mean, the left never said a word. Never said anything about the War Powers Act, and we have to stop him from doing this, and this is horrible, and he's killing people. I mean, Obama literally okayed the mission to kick Gaddafi out of office that led to him basically being shot in the head on the side of the road like a dog. Because he felt like it. Wasn't any reason for it, just did. So yes, the left, I believe Chris Matthews alluded to this guy being like their Elvis in Iran. The people of Iran, by the way, very happy this guy's dead. The people of Iran have been celebrating. Our media in this country, which is in the pockets of the left, is not reporting it. But that's what they're doing. They actually were reporting that there were protests and so much mourning at the funeral. You know, 50-plus people died at the Soleimani funeral. That's how much the people of the government of Iran cares about its own people. It doesn't. So he's dead. I had to do Oh Soleimani, and it's a Pags parody. You can go check it out. I've got it pinned over at Twitter, @JoeTalkShow. You'll see the link if you want to go check that song out again. I've actually got the version where it was when it aired live on the program on TV and on radio. You'll see Carrie, my co-anchor and sidekick, well, my news anchor and sidekick, reacting to it. She's a naysayer. Doesn't really like my parodies, but you know, she can get over it. Go check that out. I've got another Pags parody. This one is about Jerry Nadler and how he was taking the articles of impeachment from the House to the Senate yesterday or the day before. And I call that one the Waddler. So you have to go check that out too. So your thoughts about what really is happening in Iran. Do you have a real picture of what's happening in that country? About how they're celebrating the death of Soleimani? About how young people are in the streets trying to get a real government that at least has the illusions of having some freedom and liberty. And how about shooting down a plane that the left in this country blamed on President Trump that was just a dastardly deed done by horrible people, the government of Iran? 1-800-501-7080, 1-800-501-7080, JoePags.com. We're coming right back. Weekend with Joe Pags. It's 1-800-501-7080, 1-800-501-7080, joepags.com. The bottom of the hour, I'm going to bring you that interview with Erica Casarai. It's hard to pronounce it. You'll hear me screw it up in the interview. But she does a video. It's only 5 minutes long and has 5 or 6 million views, telling the truth about what happened in Iran, telling the truth about Soleimani. People have been lying about who this guy was, and the people who are colluding to lie about who he was are the radical left media, the radical left impeachment hounds in the House of Representatives. The bottom line is, I mean, honestly, this guy was bad, killing his own people. The leader of the military there, who showed nothing but hatred and disdain for anybody who is of any different religion, any different mindset, and the president didn't go seek him out to kill him with no reason behind it. He sought him out, and his military leader sought him out, and his sidekick, because of what he just pulled in Iraq. I mean, think about it. We've got generals here. If they just decided, you know what, we're going to go and do an operation in Canada or Mexico, kill a bunch of Canadians or Mexicans, and there will be no response, Canada or Mexico would have every right to say, what are you doing in my country? What are you doing in a country other than yours? We're going to take you out before you can do it again. Bottom line. So Soleimani being dead is an overwhelming good thing for planet Earth. The left in this country would have you believe he just killed their favorite actor in Iran. It's very strange. 1-800-501-7080, joepags.com. Your thoughts on that and the Pags parody, Oh, Soleimani, I brought it for you. Let me say hi to Sam, who's in Parker, Colorado. Sam, what's going on?
Joe, that Oh, Soleimani was just, that was superb.
Thank you very much.
I mean, it really sticks with you. You know, you're no Dean Martin, but you're a whole lot better than I am and about everybody else.
Well, I appreciate that. I am not Dean Martin. I will admit that openly.
Yeah, okay, but it was good. But what I wanted to say is, in a span of 2 months, Trump took out both al-Baghdadi and Soleimani. And those two guys were arch enemies, and that's the way you defuse trouble in the Middle East. You get rid of these bad actors who would be fighting on forever, but he's calming the situation there.
Well, he is calming the situation because Iran's response to him taking out Soleimani was, let me lob a few missiles in, not hurt anybody, not really cause much damage, and now, America, you better stop it. Then Iran was afraid to really respond and try to take people out, and they could have, because they saw what his response was to them going after the embassy. He's got them shaking in their boots, which is kind of what Bush did to Iran, and then Obama for 8 years kissed their asses.
Yeah. Yep. And I'm sure that guys like Kim Jong-un in North Korea take notice when something like that happens.
I agree with you, and I appreciate it. Thank you, Sam. Open line now, 1-800-501-7080, 1-800-501-7080. What a great point. Kim Jong-un is watching this go down, right? The evil dictator of North Korea, where you've got hundreds of thousands, some would say millions, of people in concentration camps simply because they disagree with this guy. And those who are in these work camps are the lucky ones. The other ones are just shot and killed if you disagree with Kim Jong-un. Now he's, well, we're going to set off a missile. We've got an intercontinental ballistic missile. We're going to do more nuclear testing. and he's saber-rattling. And then he watches what happens to Iran when they dare do something wrong to one American. You kill an American? Watch this. Seriously. Now, you've got people in Venezuela, people in North Korea, people in China. The president would say China. Who are having, they have to take note. Whoa. You do something against America or its interests, this guy who's in charge is going to take action. And he did. And it was decisive. But what a difference a few years can make. You get bin Laden, and everybody cheered. I only agreed with Obama on three things the entire time he was president of the United States. Feel his policies, his increased taxes and regulations were frankly un-American. I feel that he doesn't like how America got here. He hates colonialism. He was raised by somebody who hated colonialism, his father. Well, he wasn't raised by his father, but he knew that his father hated colonialism and how Great Britain owned Kenya back in the day. He had this deep disdain for how we got here. And I think that he sort of ran the country through a mindset of revenge. Having said that, I did agree with him three times. One, let's cap CEO pay on companies that borrow taxpayer money. That makes sense to me. You're going to borrow money from the taxpayer. That means you're not running your business very well, or you need some sort of help. Cap that pay at $500,000 a year. If you want to pay your CEO more than that, well, then pay back our money. Made sense. Take out the pirates that boarded a ship, an American ship, off the coast of Somalia. I agreed with that. Smart move. It's exactly what should have been done. And then take out bin Laden. 100% could not agree with him more. I did not, as somebody who's conservative and somebody who didn't like his policies nor agenda, I did not think to myself, I have to figure out why it's bad to kill bin Laden. I didn't even pause for a half a second to say, let me figure out how I can complain about Obama killing bin Laden. No, what I said was, you know what? You get my applause on this one. You killed a bad guy. Thank you for doing that. And then we move on. We talk about other stuff. But the left, for some reason, found a reason why al-Baghdadi was a religious scholar who also enjoyed playing soccer and was very shy. Very shy as a youth. That's what we got from that. And now that he's killed this guy, Soleimani, he was the Elvis of the people of Iran. And they want us to believe that. 1-800-501-7080, 1-800-501-7080, JoePags.com. Go there for Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, email. You can also see the live video feed is up and running as we do the program. Scroll down, sign up for the newsletter as well. We come back, Erica Kasserai from Iran explains who Soleimani really was. Don't touch that. You're going to want to hear what she has to say on the weekend. Stay here.
This is The Weekend with Joe Pags.
Stations across the land, JoePags.com, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, email, all right there, plus the live video feed as we do the program. Scroll down, sign up for the newsletter. Check out the Pags parodies. There is a parody list there. Click on parodies, you'll see the entire playlist. The latest parodies, O Soleimani, which you just heard a little while ago, plus they did one called The Waddler about Jerry Nadler and the Democrats bringing the articles over to the Senate from the House. We'll play that for you a little bit later in the program. In the interview section, you can see this interview that I did just a couple of days ago. Her name is Erica Kasserai. I got it wrong, so you'll hear her correct me here in a moment. But she's a young woman who is from Iran originally, is an American now, and decided that she was sick and tired of hearing everybody call this Soleimani guy this great guy and how people in Iran liked him or something. She wanted to set the record straight. And again, I messed up how to pronounce it. And Erica, if you could, tell me how to pronounce it again.
Kasrai.
Kasrai.
Yes.
I should be able to say that. But Erica, I saw your video. First of all, welcome to the program. Thank you.
Thank you for having me, Joe. I really appreciate it. I won't try your last name either.
Well, Pags is what we go with because it's easier that way. But I appreciate you letting me know. It's Kasrai. I should know that. All right. So I watched the video. I wasn't familiar with you. You might not have been familiar with me. That wasn't the important thing. The important thing was the message that you had, because you are Iranian. Now, are you from Iran originally, or are you ethnically Iranian?
No, I was born in Iran.
Okay.
And my family immigrated to the United States in late 1984.
How do you do that, though? Because in 1979, the Ayatollah took over, the theocracy started, and basically freedom and liberty were just a thing you might have wanted in the past, but you couldn't even want it anymore because you might be killed. How did you get away 5 years later?
Well, as you know, under a Shia Islamic state, there is no freedom of religion, and my father's family is Baha'i, and the Baha'i religious minorities were persecuted first among the religious minorities. So we were, in fact, religious refugees, if you will. And so that is how we were able to escape and leave the country and seek refuge in the United States.
I'm glad you're able to. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm glad you're here. I'm glad you guys were able to get away. I don't want anybody to be persecuted because of their religious beliefs or killed, as so many were. And this whole Shia versus Sunni Muslim thing is still confusing to me. They hate Iraq. They love Iraq. Iraq is mainly Shia now. It was run by a Sunni guy in Saddam. It's all very confusing to a very dumb American like me. But what's not confusing... I appreciate it. And maybe we could talk further about that. But I'm glad you got here. And again, I was made aware of you because people started sending me your video. And the video that you made was in response to the killing of this guy, Qasem Soleimani. And the fact that he died made the mainstream media in this country say, we killed Elvis, we killed their top military leader, we killed a head of state, how dare we assassinate somebody, and the people of Iran will mourn this guy, when the reality was they were celebrating, weren't they?
That's right. And the whole reason I made the video was because what the mainstream media was putting out there was completely opposite to what was happening on the ground.
Yeah.
And for those of us who work in Washington on Middle East policy, you know, we know the name Qasem Soleimani very well. But for the average American, the name Qasem Soleimani was really the first time that has ever been out there in those sound waves.
Yeah.
And I thought, this is really bizarre. I had a bunch of friends call me and say, hey, what do you think? Are we going to war with Iran? Like, who is this guy? So I just, you know, I was like, okay, well, I'll just make a little video for my friends and, you know, tell them what I think. And as an activist, I have access to a network of really unbelievably brave young people inside Iran who are constantly updating us on social media about what's happening. And what I saw was people celebrating, making cakes and cookies and giving out fruits, even in Iraq. So I just thought it was so bizarre that the media was comparing Qasem Soleimani to Elvis or to the head of our CIA. I even had friends on the left who were like, I can't believe you're celebrating. This is crazy. And so I just wanted to set the record straight for those people who actually wanted to know the truth. And frankly, I think for most of us Americans, I mean, it's a great privilege to have freedom of speech and to have freedom of press. But I think that we have the press has really taken advantage of that freedom. And, you know, I've had a young man who reached out to me on Instagram who's 14 and said, Miss Erica, is this the same person who put that YouTube video out? Thank you so much. I felt so scared. I thought Iran was going to bomb us and we were going to go to war, and you made me feel better. And
isn't that crazy? And here's a guy who he only gets the information from the left media is what we're talking about. It's Erica Kasrai. She is Iranian. She put this video together called Truth from an Iranian. I'll link to it again. I don't think you need my help, but I'll link to it again because so many people have seen it now. What is the YouTube channel name so people can go and follow you there as well?
So my YouTube channel is just Erica Kasrai. Erica is my American nickname because my Farsi Saghar is very hard to pronounce.
It is.
I'm also on Twitter. If anyone wants to follow me on Twitter, it's actually Saghar Kasrai, S-A-G-H-A-R. You know, Qasem Soleimani to the Middle East is a monster, was a monster. And
well, he was a monster to more than the Middle East. I mean, if I have my numbers right, 600 plus American soldiers were killed because of this guy. If I have the news right, because again, the left media won't show us this, 1,500 or 1,600 Iranians were killed a month and a half, 2 months ago. Because they dared say we want freedom and liberty. This guy masterminded killing them. And by the way, we didn't kill him in Tehran. We killed him in Baghdad. What was he doing in Iraq? Why was he there after our embassy was stormed? Because he had something else going on. So why don't we know that more? Is it because of what you said? The media uses its First Amendment but forgets that it has responsibility attached to it?
That's right. Absolutely. You said it. You know, the media has the moral responsibility to speak truth and to be objective and allow the American people to think for themselves. And, you know, a lot of people have reached out to me and said, you know, we don't even watch the news anymore. And I'm going to say that both the right and the left is guilty. We must stop this divisiveness and attacking one another and being so polarized. We have to learn how to have genuine conversations with each other.
Yeah.
And frankly, I think the reason that my video went viral is because, I don't know, I think there was just a sense of peace that people really don't have because of the current affairs. And, you know, the media and the entertainment world paints the Muslim world and the Middle East as all terrorists.
Yeah.
And, you know, and vice versa. The propaganda of the Islamic regime is the same. You know, they paint the United States as this great Satan and the people as evil. Where I think that this is a time that we should start showing the beauty of America. Look, America is and does serve as the greatest example of freedom and democracy in the world. And we need to use the principles that were founded in this country to teach the world about what democracy looks like and how do we practice it in everyday life in America, and vice versa. Let's try to paint the Middle East and the Arab world and the Muslim world as with human faces.
Yeah.
These terrorists have hijacked Islam and use it to just scare and lead with fear. And we shouldn't buy into those talking points. And what I see from the left, unfortunately, is the left media is just repeating those talking points, despite their attempt to paint Qasem Soleimani as a hero.
Yeah.
Iranian people have taken to the streets since that day, since the downing of the Ukrainian airline, to show the world that this is not who we are. You know, they're pulling down the picture of Qasem Soleimani that have been put up on, you know, walls and schools and banners. If you go to Twitter and, you know, just look up hashtag Iranians detest Soleimani, you're going to see countless numbers of videos where young, brave Iranians are trying to show the world they don't hate America.
But the world has to receive it, though, Erica, and that's the problem. The world doesn't receive it when the mainstream media here, or what I call the legacy media here, won't report it. They need to report it. They didn't report that the Iraqis were cheering in the streets when he died. They didn't report that the Iranians, and Iraq, by the way, is majority Shia. Iranians were in the streets really protesting, and not that they're so in love with us, and I've heard often my entire life that the Iranian and people do like us, that the Iranian government doesn't. But it was more about taking down that Ukrainian airliner with a bunch of Iranians on it, shooting it down because they felt like it. That I felt that was a sea change in when the people said, that's it. Then all the news anchors resigned. Then the Ayatollahs said, people are going to pay for this, because they're scared now, because the people are really rising up, aren't they?
I'm so impressed. You are so well informed.
Thank you.
Absolutely. I mean, I think there was two catalysts. First, for sure, it was Qasem Soleimani being eliminated. And the second one was, look, the regime lied to people for 3 days on state TV that, you know, we don't know. It was the Americans. They took it down. And then they kind of had to come out and publicly say, oh, it was a mistake. We accidentally did it. I frankly don't believe that it was a mistake. But when the truth comes out, I don't want to speculate. But, you know, they're not exactly known for being honest.
Right.
You know, and right now the regime, I don't want to call them Iranian. I don't want to give them the honor of them being an Iranian.
Okay.
They're
just
not
call them
Iranian.
The regime. That's fine.
The regime, the evil regime that has occupied my country. They have their tentacles in Iraqi government. And that is why the Iraqi people are protesting, because of the corruption of the Shia militias, which are the Hashd-e-Shaabi, that are being paid and trained by the Islamic Republic and the Quds Force.
Right.
Their tentacles are in Hezbollah. And, you know, as a matter of fact, the Lebanese protesters, they've been pouring out into the streets protesting against Hezbollah. They don't want to be identified as terrorists. And Hezbollah and Hamas and the Quds Force are all terror groups that have held hostage the governments and the peoples of the region.
And by the way, Hamas is Sunni and Hezbollah is Shia. And the fact that they're working together tells us there's a really dastardly end that they want to come to. Eventually, those two are going to fight each other again. But right now, they're teaming up, which is a scary thing for the rest of the region. I'm with you. Let me ask you this. I'm almost out of time. And it's Erica Kasrai. It's K-A-S-R-A-I-E. Go and follow her. I'm going to go follow you on Twitter right now. Can I get a follow back, Erica? Can I get
Absolutely.
That?
Absolutely.
Okay, good,
Absolutely.
Good. I'll go follow you right after the interview. But let me ask you this one last thing. And I've asked this of several Middle East experts, but nobody actually from Iran. The Iranian people want them out. The Iranian people want freedom and liberty or something at least closely resembling that as soon as they can get it. You've got a parliament that's chanting death to America, a regime that's holding them all hostage that will kill them in the streets if they dare say, hey, we'd like a little bit of freedom. Do the people have the strength? I know they have the moral fortitude, but do they have the actual strength to overwhelm and overcome this government and have a free election? Is the military still in the pockets of the regime, or can the military say, listen, the people have turned, we should probably take their side? What's likely to happen?
That's a really great question. I wish that I had the answer to that. However, I do believe that the military, they have put out some generals in the military in the past have put out statements and put it on social media, basically threatening the regime and saying, if you start slaughtering people in the streets, we're going to stand with the people. And I really believe that a military coup is necessary at some point. Frankly, I think that President Trump needs to stay the course with the sanctions policy, smart policy.
But he's attacked here for doing that. You know that.
Well, that's okay. He's never.
he doesn't seem to care. You're right.
He can do no right, you know, within a certain population.
Right.
But frankly, President Trump has done exactly what he said he was going to do from the first day he's gotten to office.
Yeah.
And I commend him for that. The fact that he tweeted out in Farsi, you know, the most tweeted out Farsi tweet in the history of Farsi tweets.
Wow.
Has, you know, that says something. The eyes of the world have come onto the Islamic Republic. And they know that the world is watching. And that is the course that President Trump needs to continue to take, because he's holding this regime accountable. This is the first time that, you know, that a world leader has stood up to a bully. The Islamic Republic is a coward. They're weak at home. And the people feel empowered that President Trump is speaking to them and standing with them.
I'm really frankly out of time, but I have to ask you this question because I'm amazed by the conversation. When Obama was in office, he said, we're not going to meddle in the elections of the Islamic Republic of Iran. He actually, as they were killing, there's a 27-year-old woman, a beautiful woman killed, shot and killed in the middle of the street because she dared get out of her car that day, that there was a day of protest because the guy who really won wasn't allowed to take office because he wasn't going to follow what the Ayatollahs wanted. Had then President Obama maybe tweeted something in Farsi or maybe said, hey, people of Iran, we do have your back and we want fair elections there. Could that have turned the tide, do you think?
Absolutely. And today the protesters in Iran are chanting referendum, referendum, constitution, constitution,
wow.
Which means they want a referendum and a new constitution. And I truly believe that if we stay the course, the Iranian people will have a free and democratic Iran that will be friends with its neighbors and with the United States.
I hope it happens. Erica, can we talk often?
Absolutely. Please invite me back.
I will.
Great. Thank you for giving the Iranian people a voice.
Yeah, you're very welcome. It's Erica Kasrai. Go and follow her. I'm gonna link to everything that you do because I don't even think that I'm saying it right yet, and I'm sure I've only spelled it once. So I'll put it out there on my social media. Make sure people go and follow you. I'm going to go follow you right now. I actually put that entire video up on my social media, so go stop by Twitter, @JoeTalkShow. And you will see how to get a hold of her, and you could tweet to her. Her Twitter accounts are under attack. The left is attacking her as some sort of a lobbyist for Libya or some crap. The bottom line is what she says is verifiable truth about Soleimani and about Iran, and it was incredible information. Your thoughts on that? 1-800-501-7080. 1-800-501-7080. JoePags.com. Stay right here. have you, the weekend with Joe Pags. 1-800-501-7080. 1-800-501-7080. Next hour, you're going to hear my my Pags parody, The Waddler, about Jerry Nadler and how they were walking around the Capitol. We'll also talk about Kenneth Starr and Alan Dershowitz joining the Trump team when it comes to impeachment. All right? So let me go to the phone lines in the meantime. A lot of people want to talk about Iran and that interview that I just did with Erica. Let me go say hello to Jim, who's in Canada. Jim, what's on your mind? Hi.
How you doing, Joe?
Living the dream, man. What's happening?
Yeah, good. I listen to you all the time. And, man, that Erica, she should be in Trump's government in Iranian affairs. Anyway,
I think so as well, yeah.
My question is this. What do you think President Trump would have done if instead of that was 63 Canadians on that Ukrainian flight that was shot down, it would have been 63 Americans? What do you think he would have done?
I think that he probably would have launched an attack. Is Trudeau ready to launch an attack?
No, I think our government, our prime minister is spineless. But I really think, we should.
Did I lose you? Yeah, Jim, I think it's a shaky. You said that we think we should something. Then I lost you. What would you say?
I think we should be. He should be more like Trump, Prime Minister Trudeau.
Well, I agree. I'm losing your phone, and I appreciate the sentiment. It appears to be that you're asking what would Trump do had it been Americans on that plane instead of Canadians. I think that the answer is pretty obvious because of what he did after Soleimani killed one American. You got to get somebody better than Justin Trudeau. The guy is some woke doofus who is like a paper tiger. He's another good-looking guy like Obama who speaks well and looks good and makes the right faces. Yet, and says the right things, yet is weak and is watching Canada get overrun by people who are far left-wing progressives, and he doesn't seem to care. He just likes having the office. It's very strange to me watching that guy in action. I've got about a minute for you. What's going on, Dave? Hi.
Yeah, hi. I have this juxtaposition I want to talk about with President Trump. Yeah. He's a billionaire. Everything he does, he's an incompetent boob. Hillary and Ilhan Omar, they're just dismissive, you know. Hillary and Benghazi, she's like, my subordinate's 125 requests from Ambassador Stevens, you know, it's their fault. So how is it that, you know, Don has such great people working for him, subordinates, you know, that make him a billionaire, but these people, public servants, can't do anything right?
I hear you. The bottom line is the president is evil. He's bad. He's no good. Evil orange man. And he'll be attacked mercilessly simply because he's not a Clinton. Simply because he's not Ilhan Omar, who, by the way, is in trouble. Ilhan Omar is in trouble. She's being investigated now for potential bigamy. Not bigamy, but for potential law-breaking by marrying her brother, allegedly. Also, possibly immigration violations by doing that marriage just to get him here. You know, they're looking at a lot of people in the Justice Department finally are focusing attention on her. Very interesting. Keep it here. Much more to come.
This is The Weekend with Joe Pags. America, it's The Weekend with Joe Pags. To talk to Joe, call 800-501-7080. And now, The Weekend. Here's Joe Pags.
Great radiations across the land, joepags.com, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, email, all right there. Plus, the Blaze Radio Network, glad to have you along for the ride. It is The Weekend with Joe Pags. Thanks a lot. So, Iran, we covered that last hour for you. A lot of people still calling and writing about that. You can go and tweet about it. I posted that interview with Erica Casrai on my Twitter. You can go and see it. Well, it's on YouTube. Just click on it and go watch it again if you'd like to. Really, really smart young lady. I'm glad that she's putting out the truth about what's happening in Iran and not allowing the left media to sort of set the narrative, even though it's false. We need to get the truth out there. But now impeachment. You had Nancy Pelosi and Maxine Waters and Adam Schiff and Jerry Nadler and the like, all walking around from the House of Representatives to the Senate. Almost looked like they couldn't find where they were going. And this sort of march, this death dirge, it was very strange watching it for me, this is them trying to make their mark in history, their legacy. Their legacy will be what fools they were. Their legacy will be decided in November this year when the House of Representatives, I believe, fully will go back to the Republicans, and the Senate will probably add even more Republicans, and the president will be reelected easily. That's what their legacy is going to be. It's embarrassing what they tried to do. It's embarrassing what they are doing. And by the way, Schiff trying to amend the impeachment articles, that's not something you can do. You can't just do that. So that didn't work out either. So I'm going to get into who the president's adding to his defense team. And I also want to know what you think he should push for. We need what? We need a long trial, 6-8 weeks. We need to have Schiff testify and the so-called whistleblower, the leaker, testify and have all these people just go down the list, have Hunter Biden testify. There's a rule that Ted Cruz and others are pushing for, which would be if you want a new witness left, no problem. We get to have one too. Tit for tat. We'll have Ted Cruz on this program in a little while to talk about that as well. But right now, yes, two parodies in one weekend. When I saw Jerry Nadler waddling around, I couldn't help myself. I had to do a PAGS parody, and I like to call it the Waddler. Hold on a second. I'm not going to play that. This is actually the version where you can hear the reactions of my staff during the week. Let me give you the version that's just for the weekend. The Waddler. What I see when I see Jerry Nadler walking around the Capitol in Washington. Let's go.
Well, he's the type of guy who lost a lot of pounds.
Uh-huh.
Back in the day, he'd dine all over town. He'd have himself some pasta, burgers, and some fries. Now he spends his days just spinning Nancy's lies. I call him the Waddler.
Yes.
Yeah, the Waddler. He waddles round and round and round and round.
Give me another one.
Oh, well, there's Nancy on his left and Maxine on his right. Shifty Schiff is there too, you know they are tight. And when you ask him, hey Jerry, why'd you change your mind? Remember 98, you said Clinton was maligned. He starts a-waddling, yeah, he's a waddler. He waddles round and round and round and round.
Take me to the bridge.
Oh well, he waddles through DC town. Doesn't realize he's a clown. Even when happy, he seems to frown. He kisses Nancy's ass, so his nose is kind of brown. Oh yeah, he's the type of guy who'll lie right to your face. Simply hates Trump, just wants him out of the race. And when his sham fails, he's sure to fake a grin. Good thing for Jerry, he can still play the penguin. Yeah, he's the Waddler.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, the Waddler. He waddles round and round and round and round.
That's how we do a little waddling for you. I don't know if you saw that video where they sped it up and you see Nadler walk. I'm telling you, the guy waddles. It's not a walk, it's a waddle. And listen, whatever. Whatever floats your boat. I'm just going to call him out, though. Trump assembles a made-for-TV impeachment defense team. This is from Eric Tucker and Zeke Miller at the AP. President Donald Trump has assembled a made-for-TV legal team for his Senate trial that includes household names like Ken Starr, the prosecutor, whose investigation 2 decades ago resulted in the impeachment of Bill Clinton. Former Harvard law professor Alan Dershowitz said he will deliver constitutional arguments meant to shield Trump from allegations that he abused his power. The additions Friday bring experience to the politics of impeachment as well as constitutional law to the team, which faced a busy weekend of deadlines for legal briefs before opening arguments begin Tuesday, even as more evidence rolled in. The two new Trump attorneys are already nationally known for both their involvement in some of the most consequential legal dramas of recent American history and for their regular appearances on Fox News. They add that part. Because, and they also actually write the president preferred news network. What's interesting is they added that to sort of denigrate who Starr and Dershowitz are. Kenneth Starr did an amazing job as the independent counsel investigating Bill Clinton in the day. He was a great prosecutor. His record is above reproach. Alan Dershowitz is not a former Harvard law professor. He is still a Harvard law professor. Even though he's retired, he still holds that title. And he's a guy that the left loved until about 2 years ago when he started saying, hey, why are they going after Trump? Leave him alone. The Constitution said he's okay. I didn't vote for him. I don't like his politics. But He has the right to do this and this and this. The Constitution says so. Back to the story. Dershowitz is a constitutional expert whose expansive views, the guy wrote, of presidential powers echo those of Trump. Starr is a veteran of partisan battles in Washington, having led the investigation into Clinton's affair with a White House intern that brought about the president's impeachment by the House. Clinton was acquitted at his Senate trial, the same outcome Trump is expecting from a Republican-led chamber. Still, the lead roles for Trump's defense will be played by White House counsel Pat Cipollone and Trump personal lawyer Jay Sekulow, who also represented Trump during special counsel Robert Mueller's Russia investigation. Democrats released more documents late Friday from Lev Parnas, an indicted associate of Trump lawyer Rudy Giuliani, with photos, text, and audio as they made their case against the president over his actions toward Ukraine. There are some signs of tension involving the president's outside legal team and lawyers within the White House. Some White House officials bristled that the announcement was not coordinated with them. The White House waited until Friday to confirm the full roster of the president's lawyers. By the way, also on that roster is Pam Bondi, the former attorney general of the great state of Florida. Lev Parnas, by the way, is a guy the president says he doesn't know. Well, there are pictures of him. Well, there are pictures of the president with thousands and thousands and thousands of people he might never have met, might have just posed for a picture. So, I mean, if a picture, how many Hollywood celebrities and far leftists do we have pictures with Jeffrey Epstein? We have pictures with Harvey Weinstein or Weinstein. Tons, right? Tons of them. So impeachment is going to go down, has already gone down. Before they sent the articles over, I truly don't believe that the president had been impeached. Now that the articles have been delivered, the president has been impeached, which means accused. And now he'll be vindicated pretty quickly. It depends on whether Mitch McConnell wants to have a long trial and have all these witnesses and all that, or just wants to, let's take a vote to throw this out. And if the vote is 51, say throw it out, then it's out. The problem is, although the Republicans have the majority in the Senate, there are some Republicans like Susan Collins, moderate, leans left. Lisa Murkowski, moderate, leans left. Mitt Romney hates the president. That could keep it going. Or they could vote, get rid of it, have a nice day, and move on. And then the stupid waddling down the hallway would not make any sense. Your thoughts on what you know about what's happening with impeachment. Bottom of this hour, it's going to be Ted Cruz, senator from the great state of Texas, talking about what it looks like. Now, the Republicans have held their game plan pretty close to their chest or to the vest. And they're not really saying whether it's going to be the long trial or the short trial and try to dismiss it quickly. They're not really saying who these witnesses are they might call if the Democrats insist on having their witnesses. I mean, they're playing it pretty well, but also being pretty coy. So I do ask Cruz directly, can you fill us in on something? Give us a little inside baseball. Let me know what you're planning, what you're thinking, what exactly is going to go on here. And he gives me some pretty good answers. Your thoughts on the impeachment sham, the ridiculous walking the articles for a half an hour around the Capitol building or around the Capitol Hill. Your thoughts on they know it's going to fail and he's going to be found not guilty. Why they're doing it anyway? 1-800-501-7080. 1-800-501-7080. JoePags.com. Stay right here. Joe Pags, 1-800-501-7080. It is on. It is on. Going to happen on Tuesday, opening arguments or opening statements. And the trial is going to be a sham. It's going to be stupid. But I think the left is going to be exposed even more than it has been so far on how political, how ridiculous, how partisan this has been. It's kind of interesting. You've actually got senators who are running for president. I think it was five or six at first, but now it's down to what, three? You've got Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, and Amy Klobuchar, who are all three senators still running for president. You also had Kamala Harris in there and Cory Booker in there, but they're not running anymore. Horrible candidates, by the way. But you've got three senators that will have to be on the jury in this impeachment trial. Three senators who have a very, very special interest in getting the president convicted and launched out of office because he is their political rival. Remember, the whole argument is that the president was trying to take out his political rival, Joe Biden, who, by the way, was not at the time and isn't now his political rival. But that's the argument. He did it for his own personal gain. Well, if Klobuchar and Warren and Sanders all vote to convict the president, aren't they doing it for their own personal gain? Kind of what they're talking about, right? Can we then impeach them for doing something for their own personal gain? Or should they recuse themselves because they've got a conflict of interest? They want the guy's job. How can they possibly stand in judgment of him when they want his job? Think about it. 1-800-501-7080. Ted Cruz at the bottom of the hour to explain how this is going to work and give us some inside baseball into what the Republicans probably will do. Meantime, to the phone lines, line one, going to be Tim in Louisiana. Tim, what's going on?
Yes, sir. I think all of this impeachment stuff against Donald J. Trump is in part or mostly because of the things that Obama and Hillary did when she was a Secretary of State. You do know about 20% of our enriched uranium was given to the Russians at a cheap price.
Right, through Uranium One. Right, I'm listening. I think I might have lost him too. That's very odd to me.
Like the most amount of missiles in the whole wide world, and they got this thing called Satan II, a stealth nuclear missile that can destroy the state of Texas with its 10 nuclear warhead, and you know, they just sold a lot of their technology came up to Chinese hands and Russians hands. And they're making stealth fighters that look identically like our own F-22 Raptor and F-35 Lightning. And I think all this impeachment garbage is something to cover up for what, you know, Obama did as president.
I think you're probably right. Tim, I don't know if you're getting another caller what the story is, but your phone's getting sketchy on me. Okay, I hear your point. I'll say this. The plan was 8 years of Obama, 8 years of Hillary Clinton as president. That was the plan. It's obvious. We all know it. It's clear that was the plan. Because if Hillary Clinton takes office, you don't get to worry about Uranium One or the Clinton Foundation or what they did with the millions of dollars to Haiti. You don't have to worry about what happened in Benghazi and the cover-up there. You don't have to worry about Fast and Furious anymore, that illegal operation by the Obama administration. You don't have to worry about any of that because she's going to cover for what he did. Clearly. She would cover it because she would be in charge. Comey would still be the CIA. Actually, probably wouldn't be the FBI director because he's the one that she believes, you know, would have almost cost her the job had she won. So he probably would have been gone day one. Trump should have gotten rid of him day one as well, but he waited a little while, so that got him in trouble. But Hillary Clinton was just going to keep it all hush-hush. Don't look over here. Look at the shiny thing over here. Don't worry about all we did down here. Don't worry about the FISA court. Don't worry about the fact that we actually wiretapped Trump Tower. Don't worry about us surveilling reporters and the IRS not giving nonprofit status to conservative groups. Don't worry about any of that. I'm the president. I'm Hillary. I'm here. We're all good. Well, she lost. And because she lost, she could no longer protect. And I think that's why there's been this launching of every attack you can think of against this sitting president. Because he does want to uncover corruption, which is what he tried to do in that Ukrainian phone call. Nothing more, nothing less. Back to it. Let me say hello and welcome to line three. It's going to be Kansas and Rick. Rick, what's going on? Hi.
Thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
Let me just say this. I was fortunate to be invited to a 10-day White House conference. Though I am a Republican, it was a Democratic president. It was Bill Clinton. And yeah. I just want to tell everybody, these people that are there, these Democrats, they live in a different world than we do. They do not, once they...
What is going on with these phones, dude? Let me go back at it. Rick, we lost you for a second. You went to the White House.
Hello.
Yeah, you went to the White House, and the Democrats, yeah, this, that, and the other. Talk to me.
Right. And I was sitting at a conference table with some of the worldwide media leaders and the White House, and they do not live in our world. They live in a separate world. You have to understand that. I don't condone what they're doing, but they do not live in the world we live in. Their perception of the United States is vastly different than ours. They don't know the reality of us, and that's why I like Donald Trump. He's out there working for the working man and woman.
Well, Rick, if you can, give me what you mean by that, though, very quickly. Well, what's different about their perception than ours?
I attended the White House conference on youth, drugs, and violence, and I was sat on a round table with media and elected officials, and President Clinton was the president, and we was talking about drug usage, and there's no. Until finally one lady said, you know, and this is back in the Clinton days, says it's a tragedy that when my child has the first encounter with a police officer, it's going to be a negative experience. Now, I was a police officer at the time and I was invited, and that was it for me. I had to speak up finally. Their perception is vastly different. Their perception has been different for years. I don't know what's going to become, but let's just all pray that Trump gets reelected, because I'm telling you, if these people get elected, it's over. It's our country is going down the tube. So this whole impeachment's a sham. Nancy Pelosi needs to go back home and clean off the crap of her sidewalks. And
right.
And these people need to go back to where they're from, because they are leading our country down the crap hole. I mean, it is just terrible. I know Americans across this country are thinking the same thing. What the heck are we becoming here? We're America. We stand for freedom. So that's all I got to say. But
and it's good stuff. No, and I appreciate you filling me in. I didn't know where the perception was or their perspective was. I do now, and I get it. It is 1-800-501-7080, 1-800-501-7080, joepags.com. When we come back, it'll be U.S. Senator Ted Cruz, Republican, the great state of Texas, going to talk about impeachment, what the Republican plan is, you know, what do they have in mind. They've been very, very hush-hush, but I do get him to admit some of their tactics that are coming up. We'll have that for you when we come back. Stay here.
This is The Weekend with Joe Pags.
Across the land, joepags.com, all the social media there, plus the live video feed. If you're not listening live, and you might not be, a lot of stations run the show after we've done it, you can always go ahead and check out the video feed. The last video feed will be available right there. Click on notifications, click on follow, and you'll get an email when I'm live there as well. We're also on the Blaze Radio Network. It is The Weekend with Joe Pags. Got a chance to catch up with Senator Ted Cruz a few days ago to ask him exactly what the Democrats and Republicans will end up doing in this impeachment scam trial. It is a sham, big time. The Republicans have been very quiet, very hush-hush about what their perspective might be, what their plan, their strategy might be. I did get a little bit out of them, though. Ted, I appreciate you. How are you?
Pags, I'm doing terrific. How about yourself?
I'm living the dream. So before we jump in full-throated, you know I got to ask you about the Astros. What the heck is going on with our Houston Astros stealing signs and using technology, and everybody got fired? Man, I'm upset. I'm not happy.
It is painful. It's messed up. It's wrong. And I feel bad. Look, I feel bad for the fans in Houston.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, you know, it's a great ball club who was playing some amazing baseball, and to have it, you know, integrity matters. And I'm really saddened to see the Astros in this mess.
Well, AJ Hinch, I mean, the guy's a really good manager, and he says that he didn't really know what was going on. I guess he destroyed one of these monitors when he found out. But I guess he just didn't do enough. I think the guy's really good, and I'm sad to see him go. He's done very well for the team, and I hope they bounce back.
Yeah, so I'm sitting here in my office in D.C., and I'm looking at the orange towel from the 2017 World Series that I waved like crazy. And, you know, I still remember game five, being there with my daughter Catherine, and it was just after her seventh birthday, the day after her seventh birthday, and that was the game that lasted till 1:30 in the morning, and
amazing game.
Just I remember dancing with Catherine and the joy, and it just makes you sad. It's messed up.
It does. Hopefully they'll bounce back. Obviously, we have to talk about impeachment. For some reason, after a month, Nancy Pelosi actually found where the Senate is. And she decided to get those. I don't know what kind of courier she was using, but it took a really long time. Ted, why do you think she delayed it? What do you think she was doing? Do you think there's really something to this report, the reports that she was protecting Biden and others running for president?
Look, I don't know. I think it was nutty. It was a weird thing. Once they vote and they've been saying over and over again, this is urgent, this is urgent, this is urgent, and then just, never mind. And I think they just, it was a weird, she got in her mind that she could somehow blackmail the Senate and dictate how the Senate was going to proceed. And it was just, it was bizarre. And it obviously didn't work. And so finally, I think she gave up on it and they're sending it over. In some ways that month-long crazy delay at the end is a fitting end to what has been months and months and months of a biased partisan kangaroo court the House Democrats had put on. I mean, it was one-sided. They ignored the precedents from both the Clinton impeachment and Nixon impeachment that allowed the minority to subpoena witnesses. They didn't allow the House, the White House, to cross-examine witnesses. It was entirely a partisan circus. But the good news is that I am confident the Senate will do much, much better. We're not going to do the kind of ridiculous proceeding that happened in the House. Instead, the Senate's going to be fair. We're going to respect due process. We're going to give both sides an opportunity to present their case, and we're going to give the president what he didn't get in the House, which is the opportunity to present his defense. And then at the end of the day, these articles are going to be thrown out. Why? Because on their face, they don't meet the constitutional standard of high crimes and misdemeanors. And so the end of this is going to be the president's going to be acquitted.
Well, I learned something from you last time, and I learned something from you every time that we talk about it. It's Senator Ted Cruz, Republican, the great state of Texas. When it comes to impeachment, it's not criminal, it's not civil, it is in fact political. But it's not supposed to be a partisan event or procedure. The founding fathers made sure that it wouldn't be by saying, and this is what you educated me about last time, treason, bribery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors. In what strange realm does Nancy Pelosi live and Jerry Nadler live and Adam Schiff live where they think that obstruction of Congress, which doesn't exist, and you can't obstruct Congress if you're going to the judicial branch to try to find out if Congress is doing the right thing, or an abuse of power, which there was no abuse of power in that phone call. We all know that. What makes them think that's another high crime and misdemeanor? It doesn't even come close, does it?
It doesn't, and they know that, but they don't care. Look, this was always about a partisan attack on the president. This is about congressional Democrats who've been angry since the day Donald Trump was elected, and ultimately they're angry at the American people. They're angry at the voters for daring to elect Trump as president. And what we've seen here, you know, this is the first time in the history of our country that any president has been impeached without the articles alleging criminal conduct, without the articles alleging any crime at all. In fact, they don't allege the violation of any law, even a civil law. They don't even so much as allege the president had a speeding ticket. This is a partisan attack by Democrats who hate the president, and it's abusing the Constitution. Impeachment was not designed to be a vehicle for disagreeing with the policy or politics of the opposing side. And by the way, Pags, I can point to, look, the shoe has been on the other foot. I was in the Senate when Barack Obama was president. I disagreed with Barack Obama on a host of policy issues that were, I think, badly harmful to the country and to 28 million people in Texas. And I led the fight against Obama's bad policies. But I never thought, and I never urged, that we use impeachment to go after him, because that's not what impeachment is designed for. This is the Democrats exercising partisan hatred, and they're abusing the Constitution, and it's wrong.
And by the way, you could have gone after Obama potentially on impeachment for Fast and Furious, for spying on reporters and getting their phone records on the fact that the IRS was not allowing nonprofits that happen to be conservative to get that sort of status. You could have gone after him possibly on Libya and taking out a leader of a country because he felt like it. But you, as you say, you didn't, because Ted, I think that you and I believe that if we don't like the guy who's in there and if he's not committing like really perjury or some sort of a crime, then you just beat him in the ballot boxes. Do you think that the Democrats just are that convinced that they cannot beat this guy?
I just think that hate has consumed them.
Yeah.
And it's, we're more divided than we've ever been. It's unfortunate. This sort of screaming rage that divides this country right now, it's not healthy for the country, and I'm hopeful we'll pass through this. I'll tell you what I urge young people, if I'm talking to young conservatives, to libertarians, I say, listen, don't respond in kind. Don't respond with that same anger. Don't respond with that same rage. You know, laugh, have a sense of humor. And respond on the substance. We can engage, we can disagree. You know, the Democrats want to raise your taxes. Republicans want to cut your taxes. Let's talk about that. Let's have a real debate.
Right.
The Democrats want to take away the Second Amendment, want to take away your guns, want to take away your religious liberty. Republicans want to defend the Constitution and defend your religious liberty. Let's talk about that, but don't engage in just the nasty, screaming hatred. And unfortunately, I think right now the Democratic Party has given in to the really angry, extreme voices in their party.
Hey, it's Senator Ted Cruz. Always appreciate the time. So it's being very, very hush-hush. Can you give us a little bit of inside baseball? Do we feel like it's going to be a long procedure? Are we going to try to get rid of this right on its face because it doesn't rise to that level? Do you need 51 votes to get rid of it on its face like that? If it's going to be a trial, what kind of witnesses are we talking about? Can you give us anything, Ted?
Sure. So the way it'll play out, the House voted to transmit the articles of impeachment. They voted to appoint the House managers. They did that today. Tomorrow, the House managers will arrive physically in the Senate, and we will receive the House managers. And so 100 senators will be sitting there in our desks receiving the House managers. The Chief Justice will come, and the Chief Justice will swear us all in. That'll happen tomorrow as well. What will happen after that is we will have a briefing schedule through the weekend where both the House managers and the White House submit written briefs, submit their arguments in writing.
Okay.
And then the trial itself will commence on Tuesday of next week. And so Tuesday of next week, I think you will see initially some battles over motions. We're going to start with a motion that is going to pass, and any motion can pass by 51 votes. Once the trial commences, 51 senators have the power to pass any motion, to do just about anything with 51 votes. We're going to start by laying out the process that the trial is going to proceed under. And that process is essentially identical, nearly identical, to how the Senate handled the Bill Clinton impeachment.
Okay.
So phase one, which will commence next week, will be opening arguments. And the House managers will present their argument. They'll have 24 hours to do so, spread over a couple of days. And then the White House defense team will present their argument, and they likewise will have 24 hours spread over a couple of days. So that'll be the first phase. After that, you have questions from senators. The Senate rules are a bit unusual on this, in that senators are not allowed to speak in open session. So you're not going to see Elizabeth Warren and me going 15 rounds on TV, because if the cameras are on, we have to be quiet.
Okay.
The way we ask questions is we do it in writing. We write the questions down, and Chief Justice John Roberts will read our questions. And so we'll have what will be probably a couple of days of questions from senators to the two sides. And then at that point, the Senate is going to debate and we're going to vote on whether to hear additional witnesses and additional evidence. And I don't know how that vote will come out. There's a division of opinion on whether additional witnesses are needed or not. But what I've said is, look, if there are 51 votes, if 51 senators decide they want additional witnesses, then at a minimum, we need reciprocity, which means if the prosecution gets a witness, the defense should get a witness.
Of course.
That means if 51 senators say, for example, that they want John Bolton to testify, then the president should be able to call Hunter Biden to testify. And it needs to be fair. We need to do better than the House and not have it one-sided, but give the defense all of the protections that due process demands.
And when it comes to witnesses, I like that you get one, we get one, because I think that will make them pause before they start asking for more witnesses. But can you...
I think that could mean that the Senate decides, you know, we don't need any more witnesses, we have sufficient evidence to decide, and witnesses aren't necessary. That's perfectly fine if that's where 51 senators end up at the end of listening to all the arguments, of listening to the responses to questions from senators. That's a perfectly good outcome if we say, all right, now let's vote on the verdict. And if that's where we end up, then at that point is when these articles will be thrown out, because the president will be acquitted and have a verdict of not guilty.
It is Senator Ted Cruz, Republican of the great state of Texas. Ted, I'm frankly almost completely out of time. But if you don't mind, what's your gut? I know what your gut was 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. I don't think the information has changed. Knowing what you know now, is there any chance this guy gets launched from office?
No. No. On their face, these articles don't meet the standard in the Constitution, which means the end of this, every senator is going to vote on each of the two articles, and you vote either guilty or not guilty. And to remove a president takes two-thirds of the Senate, takes 67 senators.
Right.
That is not going to happen. The Democrats know that. This has all been about attacking the president, and it's an abuse of the Constitution to do so. So I, for one, will be very glad when this farce is over.
Yeah, and Ted Cruz gives us inside baseball. He tells us some of what might go on next week. And you heard that first here, because a lot of news outlets are reporting the Republicans won't tell us anything. Republicans won't say what they're going to do. Well, he's just told you what they're going to do, and he's firm in his belief that the president did nothing wrong. And believe me, this is one of the top constitutional lawyers we've got in the U.S. Senate. So it's a big deal. TedCruz.org, that's his website. Your thoughts on what you just heard and on the sham that is the impeachment scandal right here on the weekend. 1-800-501-7080, JoePags.com. Stay here. Absolutely. The Weekend with Joe Pags. Thanks a lot for stopping by. I appreciate you. Plenty going on, plenty to get to, and you just heard from Ted Cruz. Now we know what the Republicans are planning to do. I mean, we don't know exactly who they're going to call as a witness and who they might want, but what we do have is at least an outline of what the strategy is. 1-800-501-7080, 1-800-501-7080, joepags.com. You probably have more questions now, having heard from him and after seeing the Waddler and Nancy Pelosi, Maxine Waters, and Adam Schiff walking around the Capitol the other day. So your thoughts. Let's get to Tom in Denver. Tom, what's going on? Hi.
Hi, Joe.
Hey, man, what's happening?
I call.
Hey,
I just have a quick question. Shouldn't the Democrat senators recuse themselves from sitting in judgment on the president, since removing the president would benefit them directly?
Yeah, absolutely, yes. I said this earlier, maybe you weren't listening yet, but obviously Amy Klobuchar and Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, who are all sitting senators in the United States Senate, they're on the jury when it comes to impeachment and this trial. If they were to vote to impeach or to find him guilty and remove him, they would be benefiting their own political gain. So without a doubt, they should recuse themselves. The Democrats should, out of pocket, lose three people immediately.
Have you heard anybody mention this?
Well, I mean, I mentioned it about a half an hour ago, but other than that, I don't know that anybody who's in power has mentioned it. During the week, I talked to Pam Bondi, who is one of the lawyers for the president. We talked to Cruz, obviously, and Cornyn and Ron Johnson from Wisconsin and so on in the Senate. I'll ask them, are you going to push to have them recuse themselves? Because they really should not be sitting in judgment of somebody whose job they want.
Exactly. Yes.
All right, brother. Good stuff. I appreciate it. Open line now, 1-800-501-7080, 1-800-501-7080, joepags.com, Ocean City. It's Charlie. What's happening, Charlie? Come on.
Hey, Joe. I listened to Ted Cruz, and I like him a lot.
Yeah.
I was questioning if, by chance, these feckless Republicans vote to remove the president. He has opportunity to reestablish his campaign and go for another two terms.
No, he doesn't. That's untrue. You're misreading what the actual Constitution says. He does not get to go for two terms. You get two full terms as per the 22nd Amendment. That's it. I know that there was some speculation that if he's found not guilty, we wipe away the first term that he had and he could go for two more terms. That's not true.
Oh, well, I heard that on the radio this week.
It's incorrect.
I'm not sure who said it.
Yeah, the radio guy who said it was wrong. But I get why we would look at it that way. Well, first and foremost, he's not going to be convicted. He's going to be found not guilty rather easily. You would have to have 20 Republicans join the Democrats to find him guilty, and that's not going to happen. I mean, you might find a few. Mitt Romney probably will vote to remove him and some others. But the allegation actually wasn't that if he's found guilty and removed, he can run for two more terms. He could actually never run for president again should he be removed. If he were to be found not guilty, and he's going to be, there was an allegation that he could run for two more terms because that somehow washes out the first term. That's not true. So that is not the ability out there. Whoever said it had the right idea, but they got it wrong. I appreciate you. Open line now at 1-800-501-7080, joepags.com. Much more to come. Stay here.
This is The Weekend with Joe Pags. America, it's The Weekend with Joe Pags. To talk to Joe, call 800-501-7080. And now, The Weekend. Here's Joe Pags.
Great radio stations across the land, joepags.com, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, email, it's all right there. Plus, the live video feed. Scroll down, you can sign up for the newsletter. Also, the Joe Pags store, the Pags merch, as you might say. You click on store, you'll see shirts and mugs and stickers and all sorts of stuff. The Weekend with Joe Pags. Also have the Joe Pags Show Monday through Friday, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 3 to 6 p.m. Pacific Time. Find if there's a station near you, 125-plus stations, and we're growing all the time. Just added Las Vegas. Just added also Youngstown, Ohio. Always enjoy adding new affiliations, and we're just trying our best, doing all we can. We just added a station, Marshalltown, Iowa. So we're all over the place. Make sure you check that out as well. And again, the live video feed is Monday through Friday in those times right there at the website, joepags.com. Impeachment, we have a better idea of what the Republicans will do. We have a better idea of what the plan is from the right. And we still don't know this, though. They're going to throw it out of pocket, or they're going to actually have a long trial. What Senator Ted Cruz and Senator Rand Paul had to say was, listen, we'll give you the witnesses you want, but every witness you want, we get one. And that's going to mean this Eric Ciumella idiot. That's going to mean Hunter Biden. That's going to mean Adam Schiff. That's going to mean Al Green. If the left wants to play this game, I think the Republicans are actually ready. And many times people will say, well, Republicans don't circle the wagons like Democrats do. They're not going to stick to their guns. They're not going to really make the Democrats pay for this sham they just pulled. And I think they might. You've got some people in the Senate who aren't playing around. 1-800-501-7080, JoePags.com. It's going to be line one, and Mike is in Colorado. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Joe. I just wanted to ask you a couple questions after listening to Mr. Cruz and yourself discuss the articles in the trial. I believe one of the articles is obstruction of Congress?
Yes.
Okay. So is a presidential veto permitted in the Constitution?
Yes.
Okay. Is that obstruction of Congress?
Well, no. It's actually a process that's in the Constitution. It's a good question. The charge of obstruction of Congress, I'm going to outline it quickly. It sounds like you probably already know, but I'll outline it for the other people listening. They're saying that he obstructed Congress because Congress asked for people to come and testify, and the president said, well, no, I'm going to use my executive privilege. They're not going to come and testify. And the Congress pushed the House, pushed as hard as they could to get these people to come in and give testimony or release documents or get some sort of inside White House stuff. And the president's legal team said, well, what we're going to do is we're going to challenge what you're asking for in the judiciary, and we're going to challenge it at the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court said, yes, we'll take up the challenge, but it's not going to be till like next June or next October. So the House of Representatives, honestly and actually, impeached him on an article saying he was obstructing them by going to the third branch of government and questioning whether the Congress had the authority to do what it was doing. And again, keep in mind, the Supreme Court is actually going to hear the argument. So it's a horrible case. He didn't obstruct anything. Well, he actually is using the checks and balances to make sure the legislative branch can do what it's trying to do.
But the way I look at it is obstruction of Congress is a veto by the president, and that doesn't rise to a high crime or misdemeanor.
Well, it's not obstruction either. There's no such thing as obstruction of Congress. They made that one up. Obstruction of justice, maybe that's something, but obstruction of Congress is not a thing.
All right.
All right, brother, I appreciate you. Thank you. Open line. It's a good point. If the president vetoes a bill that gets to his desk, is he obstructing Congress? I guess an argument could be made that he is. And if he is, what are we talking about here? Let me go back at it and say hello and welcome to line three. Is going to be Larry in Washington. Larry, what's going on?
Sir, I know you want to talk about the impeachment, but I have a question. I haven't been able to get on your show the last couple of weeks. A few weeks ago, you made the comment, and I used to agree with you wholeheartedly about this, about how the Bill of Rights and the Constitution was the concrete foundation upon which all of our laws are based. And it seemed to imply that it was set in stone, shall we say?
Not flexible? Right, it is. No, it's not flexible at all unless you want to amend it.
Well, sir, I used to agree with that entirely until I started looking into this the Eighth Amendment, the definition of cruel and unusual. And if you look at that, the Supreme Court has, in fact, maybe a dozen times so over the last couple of hundred years, redefined what we would call cruel and unusual. Back in the way they wrote the Constitution, it was not cruel and unusual to hang somebody for execution or to give them a firing squad. But today, and I think it's 1958 was the last time that the definition of cruel and unusual is basically what a majority of the states says. And that's quite a bit different than what they said 200 years ago. So my question is, if there is some flexibility with the interpretation of cruel and unusual, did the founders intend for there to be, throughout societal changes, other flexibility? I don't know the answer, but it appears.
Well, of course, the courts are charged with interpreting the Constitution. The actual writing of the Eighth Amendment hasn't changed. That is a foundation that's in stone. But you'll notice they put cruel and unusual, which means the person reading it and interpreting it has to give their definition. So maybe societal changes do change what the definition is as far as the judges in the court. Had the founding fathers wanted it to be, the Eighth Amendment, cruel and unusual is defined as, they would have said what it's defined as. I think sometimes they left it purposely vague, but I'm not really sure what you're disagreeing with me on. It is foundation that's in stone and it's immovable, but it, of course, is interpreted by the courts every single time, every case.
Well, I agree. Yes, sir, I agree with that. Yeah. One last point, if I may. I know you're
sure.
Busy. I think that the when the president gets to do his defense, he should call Mr. Murray, who is the director of the Secret Service, as the
president. Why?
And ask them who was working on July 20th, 1992.
and ask them to bring those people in. And that's the reason that we're having all this rigmarole.
Was that Vince Foster? What happened on that date?
Exactly.
All right, brother. I appreciate you. All right. Open line now at 1-800-501-7080. 1-800-501-7080. The Constitution is only changeable through the amendment process. That's it. Constitution is only changeable, flexible, fluid through the amendment process. That's why there is an amendment process. That's why. Okay? That's the deal. But what's written in there has been interpreted over the years, over the centuries, by the judge that's hearing it. That's where it gets weird, because now if you've got an activist judge, one way or the other, he or she is going to put their spin on it instead of sticking to what the Constitution says. If the Second Amendment says shall not be infringed, then a judge every single time should say, well, no, you can't infringe that right. It says it right here in the Constitution. But they're making, oh, well, maybe you're going to ban assault weapons, and maybe you can ban magazines this size, and maybe you can ban this, that, and the other. And it's being interpreted in a very strange way. The Supreme Court, depending on whether it's left or right, and today it's allegedly right, not so sure. The Supreme Court, it's supposed to be the buck stops here. The finish, the finito, the end, this is it. This is the last word. But yet they're actually able to go back to with different cases to the same body, the same Supreme Court, and retry them if there's new information, new evidence, or something compelling. So there's always a way to interpret it differently. It doesn't change the actual words. They're the foundation, they're in stone. The left thinks it's livable and breathable and immovable and fluid. It's not. You have to amend the Constitution if you want to change something that is a foundation that's written in there. 1-800-501-7080. Let me go to line 2 before we hit a break. It's going to be Tim in Los Angeles. Tim, what's going on? Hi.
Tim Kalem Karian for U.S. President, T-I-M space, K-A-L-E-M.
All right, Tim, thank you. Yeah, so Tim thought he'd call in and, I guess, promote himself for president, and he would put out his website or something, and that ain't going to happen. Tim, I've been in this business too long for you to be able to trick the dumb host. But I appreciate you. Good luck to you. You have no chance because President Trump's going to win again. It's 1-800-501-7080, joepags.com. Your calls when we come back. Much more on the weekend. Dinesh D'Souza at the bottom of the hour. We'll give you that interview. We talk about impeachment, talk about the progressive left. We talk about the black vote. We talk about a lot. So make sure you stick around for that. Always a great bit of education and knowledge from Dinesh D'Souza. Somebody on the chat room is asking, is that a tenor bag behind? Yes, that's my saxophone that's behind me in the wide shot here on the web stream. So yeah, that's what it is. It's my gig bag, if you will. Always have to have a bit of music around me at all times. At 1-800-501-7080, joepags.com. To the phone lines, line 1 is going to be George in North Carolina. Hi, George.
Pastor.
Is this Pastor George Lucas? Pastor, if you don't call me every week, I won't know what to do with myself, to be honest with you.
Listen, God bless you. You are doing a tremendous job for America. I want to say this. And song, the parody that you sang with Solo Mia, Now and Forever, Now or Forever, that is just awesome.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
This is a historic weekend for the show, and I just wanted to say this to you, that in 1968, and I'm not on no ego trip, Joe, you know that. In 1968, when Dr. Martin Luther King was assassinated in Memphis, Tennessee, as a baby Christian, who accepted Jesus Christ on the 26th day of February, 68, I made a vow in 1968 when Martin Luther King was killed that if God ever permitted me the opportunity to lift up his name in Washington, I would certainly do that. 19 years later, I was invited by President Reagan to the White House, and I kept my vow by saying to the president, we need revival in our nation. President Reagan made some comments, and I won't go into all of that. The next thing that happened, well, he did say that I go to him so much that I'm afraid I'm going to get a busy signal. That's what President Reagan said. And nice. When I said to the president, we need revival in the United States, then God answered, honored that request, because 30 years later, after I spoke with President Reagan, President Donald John Trump was inaugurated as President of the United States 30 years later. And prior to President Trump's inauguration, President Trump qualified, and prior to even him getting the nomination, President Trump had the spiritual gonads to say, my mother gave me a Bible. I'm a Christian, and I'm a Presbyterian. That was enough for the throne of God to place the anointing on Donald Trump to be president of these United States.
I hear you. Pastor, I hear you, and I love it every time. I appreciate you, my friend. We'll talk again very soon. Open line now, 1-800-501-7080. Joe Pags, like, we love when Pastor George calls in. Jim is in Florida. Jim, what's on your mind? Hi.
Yeah, you know, if Trump really wanted to obstruct Congress, he would have done what Hillary Clinton did, have all of the people that had, you know, had information on their cell phones just take a hammer to them. And then the little bits that were left, he could have used the bleach bit, you know. And, you know, nobody says a dadgum thing about Hillary's people smashing their cell phones because it had information that was damning for her.
Oh, and her email server, we can't get to that. She deleted a bunch of emails. You know, what Hillary Clinton did, it was actually spelled out by James Comey, who's an idiot, that she absolutely broke the law. But he alleged that because she didn't intend to, that it didn't matter. She absolutely committed crimes. Donald Trump, our president, has not committed any crimes. That's the difference here.
Yeah.
All right, brother, I hear you. Open line now, 1-800-501-7080, joepags.com. Back at it, it's going to be Antonio in New York. Antonio, what's going on?
Hey, Joe, how are you?
Living the dream. What's happening, my man?
Hey, I want to talk to you a little bit about where is conservative media on the attack on religious rights here in states controlled by Democrats, like California, New York, et cetera?
What do you mean?
And well, here's what I mean by that. So they've removed the religious exemption for vaccination in New York and California, and they're looking to do it in Connecticut and New Jersey and these other places where Democrats are in control, right?
Yeah.
We're under single-party rule here in New York.
Okay.
So, you know, basically, I think people either believe that the government decides what gets stuck into your children or not. You know, it means medical tyranny versus individual rights. And what I'm afraid of, Joe, is you can see the left saying, hey, we've implemented these mandatory vaccine laws for the greater good, right?
Right.
Why wouldn't they say, hey, you know, for the greater good, we have to implement the Green New Deal?
Well, they think they can, but here's the thing. We have a system in place, even in a very blue state like New York, which, by the way, geographically is very red. It's only blue because of New York City.
Correct.
But you have a ramification. You have a remedy. You go to the courts. You sue them on constitutional bases. And what's going to happen is you're going to lose in the first few courts. And when you get to the Supreme Court, you probably will win, because your religious freedom certainly trumps any idea that you've got to make sure that your child gets a vaccination for something. And people out there will say, well, if your child isn't vaccinated, he might get the disease. Well, your child is vaccinated, so you don't have to worry about that. If I make the decision that my child's not going to get a vaccination because there's scientific evidence that says it might kill them or cause autism or something else, and who knows, or my religion says we just simply can't have that happen, the idea that the government can make you give up your First Amendment right to make them feel better about some regulation they put in place, there's a remedy. You go to court. We just have to get somebody to go to court and actually make a viable challenge. And they always, a state like you're talking about, New York, New Jersey, California, they always stand by, well, you don't really have standing. You can't really sue. You don't have proper standing. A parent of a child whose religious beliefs are that you can't take this vaccination does have standing. That case has to happen. I'm just guessing, nobody's done it yet.
Well, No, they've gone up to as far as the New York State Supreme Court. And for example, the Amish had a school, 24 kids, all unvaccinated. And here's a group who've intentionally segregated themselves already, right? And they went up, and the New York State Supreme Court said, nope, they can do it. They can mandate this stuff.
You have to go to the U.S. Supreme Court. The U.S. Supreme Court is bound by the Constitution.
But my question is this: where is the conservative media? Like, why aren't they saying, "Hey, listen, this is baloney. We can't have this happening because it's starting to spread." And you know how it works; it goes from state to state to state to state, and then pretty soon federal.
Well, I'm in the media, and many people would say I'm in the conservative media, and I certainly talk about it—not this specifically, but I talk about the trouncing of religious freedoms all the time. Like the coach can't kneel after a game on a high school football field because that's somehow a separation of church and state issue, or the cheerleader can't hold up John 3:16 at a public school football game because somehow that's a violation of separation again. Although these people do have the individual First Amendment rights that should be protected, that's why I keep saying it's like these stupid cases where the baker has to bake a cake for a gay wedding. Yeah. Well, they were fined and they were found guilty, and all these localities said they were wrong. The U.S. Supreme Court said no, they have the right to do that. So there is a remedy. You just have to have the wherewithal and the intestinal fortitude to take it to that level, and I hope that people will. 1-800-501-7080, JoePags.com. When we come back, going to be movie maker, author, Dinesh D'Souza. Dinesh has a new book coming out next summer. We'll talk about that and movie that goes with it, the companion movie. We talk about the big lie the Democrats are continuing to spread, impeachment, and much, much more. Stay here on The Weekend.
This is The Weekend with Joe Pags.
Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, email, all right there. I posted my Pags parodies we had on this program for you over on Twitter. Make sure you go follow the Twitter page at Joe Talk Show, at Joe Talk Show. Go like the page or else I won't be able to see your tweets. Also, while you're there, check out the parodies and the other stuff that I post too. Got with Dinesh D'Souza, who is a movie maker. He is a book writer. He's got many number one New York Times bestsellers. He's got a new book and movie coming out next summer. We talk about also the previous one, Death of a Nation, in this interview. There's a lot going on, and he's got such a great amount of knowledge on all of it. Dinesh, I appreciate you. How are you?
Hey, it's great to be on the show.
Happy New Year to you, man.
And to you, too.
So there's a lot going on, and you and I have been talking about the big lie for a while. You had a book called The Big Lie, and the bottom line is this has been going on for about 100 years, if not more. This is a far left-wing progressive movement to convince us that what's happening isn't really happening, but what they say is happening is what's happening. And it's a matter of deflecting everything that they've done on somebody other than themselves. We see it with Antifa right now. We see it with the far left progressive socialists right now in Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders. Let's get into that. And by the way, you've got a new book and movie coming out this summer called The United States of Socialism that I can't wait to go and see and to read. But let's talk about that. You've got leading candidates in Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders who are right out of the bag socialists. They are like back to the socialism that was taking over Europe a long time ago. That's exactly who they are. But yet, for some reason, they've got throngs of people who support them. Why?
Well, because we have a new generation of youngsters who did not grow up under the Cold War. For them, most of that is truly history. Second of all, our socialism is packaged in the garb of identity politics. So you have sort of race-based socialism, transgender socialism, environmental socialism. And this is something kind of new because, of course, for Marx, the world is divided into two, essentially the rich and the poor, or the working class and the capitalist class. That's it. There's only a class line, nothing else. So the Democrats now on the left, they're trying to fuse classic socialism with sort of identity politics. So I call it identity socialism. It's a marriage of these two. And it appeals to young people because it's ultimately, it's a different type of, it's not the old socialism of the unions and the, it's the socialism ultimately that tries to combine free stuff, which is naturally appealing unto itself, with a certain kind of promiscuity, sexual freedom. So it's an effort to merge freedom with socialism.
Democrats have historically made these distractions, and you talk about this a lot in your books and in your movies. The distractions that we're seeing now, are we talking about the impeachment, you know, BS? Because there's so much more going on underlying what Hillary Clinton would have done had she won, what Barack Obama tried to do for 8 years and actually was successful doing for 8 years is being undone now. We have to go and get him on some other thing. Yeah, but look, he's been impeached. Look, he's a bad guy. Look, look, he slept with women. Is that what we're talking about when you talk about distractions of the left?
Well, the distractions occur on so many different levels. Yeah, I was just looking on social media. The socialists in America now are saying, you know, Venezuela is not a socialist country. I was joking about this with my wife, Debbie. And what I said
to her, who, by the way, is from Venezuela. People need to know that. Go ahead.
Absolutely. She's from Venezuela. She's following that situation closely. And I said, hey, Debbie, listen, before this is over, mark my words, we will have the left-wing narrative that Hugo Chavez was a right-winger.
Wow.
So as Venezuela goes into a further tailspin, they will say, well, Hugo Chavez was, look at him, he's a general, he's got all these buttons and so on. So he's obviously not a left-winger any more than Hitler was a left-winger. So the same rewriting of history, the repackaging of the left as the right, every time the left becomes discredited beyond redemption, they have to rechristen the tyrant to be a right-winger. That's going to happen to Hugo Chavez. That's happening in the academic front. And then on the political front, you have all kinds of lies being spun, one on top of the other. And it's really very, it's both entertaining and unnerving to watch.
It's Dinesh D'Souza, his new movie and book coming out this summer, United States of Socialism. Death of a Nation is one that you've got to go and check out. You want to see real history? Get everything he's ever done, whether it be movie form or book form or his lectures as well. Back to the students and the young people in this country. What I find to be at least buoying is that it seems as though you are able to get through to them if they listen to real common sense and fact. They're being told the same thing over and over again 100% of the time in school. Then you show up on campus if you're allowed to go and there's not too many protests. And you tell them real truth, and you actually will debate. You'll go back and forth with them. And I find that a lot of these students, if you talk to them afterwards, and I've seen some of this, will say, I didn't think about it that way. I don't know if I agree with them, but I'm going to check it out. That's really what we're hoping to do, right? I mean, the indoctrination is not so ingrained that they're 70 years old and immovable.
No, in fact, the indoctrination is not ingrained, I would say, at all. The reason that young people tend to be leftists is that they've never even heard the conservative argument. This is why colleges work so hard to keep it out, because even a little bit of disinfectant is very powerful. Look, these young people, they'll say socialism, and then all you have to say to them is, hey, do you like Uber? You like Airbnb? You like your iPhone? Now, do you think the government came up with that? What's it like when you walk into the DMV? Look at the stifling atmosphere when you walk into a typical post office. They never even thought of overnight mail until it was started in the private sector, and then they copied it. So the government is incompetent, even in the Defense Department. They're incompetent at pretty much everything they do, and every ounce of human experience confirms this. Meanwhile, young people take for granted. They cannot imagine living without the paraphernalia of modern technology. This is now the way they live their life. And this is the product of technological capitalism. They just need to pause, reflect, and there it is staring them in the face.
Follow him at Dinesh D'Souza everywhere. He's got a huge following on social media. Get his books. Go check out his movies. The new book and movie coming out this summer, United States of Socialism. What's interesting about today's day and age is that, again, young people don't consider everything that you just said. These are all private industry things that could not have been created in Venezuela the way it sits now. Could not have been created in Nazi Germany. These are things that with less regulation, less overwhelming power in central government, they can be created because the government doesn't get to tell us everything that we have to do and everything and why we have to do it. So does that get through to them? When people complain about the oil industry and you say, yeah, but your sunglasses wouldn't exist without that industry. What are you talking about? They have no clue.
There's a second part that's equally important, because young people sometimes think, well, we've got so much abundance in today's world that there's no reason we can't have free this and free that.
Yeah.
It's important for them to see that that socialism isn't really idealism. At the end of the day, it's a racket. So you consider, for example, this Andrew Yang fellow. Dinesh, I want to give you $1,000 a month for the rest of your life, right? Great. Andrew, really? Write me a check. But that's not what he has in mind. He has no intention of giving me a penny. What he means is he wants to, first of all, tax me, probably $5,000, then take that money and out of it give me $1,000 back. So then I would say, well, listen, Andrew Yang, let's not do it that way. Why don't – basically, if we subtract it out, essentially you're saying I owe $4,000. Why don't I go to my neighbors and give them $1,000 apiece? And he goes, no. It can't work like that. Why? Because, see, he's got to be in the transaction. Right. We've all got to be thankful to Andrew Yang because, quote, I am. He is sending us $1,000. So ultimately it's a vote-buying racket camouflaged as a social justice scheme.
It's crazy. It is Dinesh D'Souza. Again, get everything that he's done. He's an incredible producer of movies. These are educational movies. These aren't dramas. These are real educational movies we're going to learn. These books are incredible, too. You know, when it comes to socialism, I'm going to give you a few real-world examples. I tend to play video games every once in a while, and I'll watch a Twitch stream of a really good video game player. And last night, there was a player from Sweden, and she was talking about how she has free health care there. And somebody jumped on from the United States, and there were thousands of people in this room, and said, yeah, our healthcare system in the United States is the worst on earth. And another person said, yeah, the wealthy aren't paying enough in taxes in the United States. And I'm ingesting this and watching this, and these are all like 10-year-old, 12-year-old, 15-year-old kids that are watching, plus the 53-year-old idiot that's watching too. But at the end of the day, they really, really believe it. And you know, the fact is our healthcare is the best in the world here. A lot of world leaders come here to get their healthcare. And also the wealthy is paying an inordinate amount of taxes, 70%. Of all taxes are paid by the top 10%. So the idea that they don't know that means to me that the educational system is working. How do we counterbalance that other than what we're doing right now?
Well, part of it, I think, is to expose the Scandinavian illusion. The Scandinavian healthcare system has all kinds of holes in it. Think about it. A substantial number of people in countries like Sweden pay up for private insurance. Now, why would you do that? If the government was giving it to you all for free, why would a substantial number of people fork out their own money to essentially pay twice because they pay through taxes and
great
then they
question.
Pay again?
Yeah.
Why would they do it? They're doing it because there's a lot of stuff that they're not getting through the government systems. That's the first point. The second point is that the Scandinavians are at least honest about it. What they basically say is, we're all in the same boat. We want social insurance, so let's have real insurance. Everybody puts money in a pot. And what that means is that if you make $70,000 a year in Norway or Sweden or Denmark, you pay 40 to 50% of that income in taxes. Give half of it to the government straight out. And they don't exempt the middle class. This is the key. Whereas in this country, Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders, they try to convince people, not just middle class, but upper class middle, you know, we're not going to tax you. It's not going to be, you're not going to pay a penny. Elizabeth Warren just recently, it's only the billionaires. We're going to stick it to them. So this is a robbing Peter to pay Paul scheme. There's no social insurance in that. That's basically a straight ripoff.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And by the way, Sweden is not socialist anymore in that the government gave back to private industry a lot of the businesses in that country because they were failing miserably. They had to make it socialism light because it was failing. It's Dinesh D'Souza. Go follow him everywhere. Let's quickly talk about Iran. We got bin Laden. You and I didn't agree with Obama on much of anything. We agreed with that. We were happy. We were glad that this horrible terrorist that took out 3,000 lives was gone. We take out Soleimani, and I've heard numbers as high as 603 American soldiers killed by his actions alone. A top terrorist on planet Earth. He was taken out, and the left is apologizing. You've got Ilhan Omar saying we took out a foreign dignitary. We've got Bernie Sanders, a leading candidate who wants to be president, saying we took out a foreign leader, some sort of a dignitary. We've got Nancy Pelosi with the War Powers Act. Dinesh, what's going on? This is a bad guy. And again, a real-world example. I'm watching live PD last week, and a guy who is interacting with police on there says, hey, let me ask your opinion on Iran. They don't really hate us. They just hate Trump, right? Dinesh, how can he not know that they've hated us for 41 years? How is that possible?
Well, and then on top of this, you have Chris Matthews, you have CNN, and right. They're basically saying that this was such an act that the Iranian people are in collective mourning. Why? Because they have lost their Elvis. They have lost their Lady Di.
Crazy.
And then literally as if on cue, you have massive Iranian protests in the street against the regime, people ripping down the Soleimani posters. So right. You basically see how our press is a joke. I mean, we're living in an era where there is actually no real news reporting. It's just fakery from start to finish. It's ideology driving the news. And I think perhaps what's different is that this is becoming apparent to the man on the street. It's not just apparent to the guy closely watching. It's apparent to the ordinary guy who looks up and goes, wait a minute. If I was watching the news, would I be prepared for these massive anti-government demonstrations in Iran? No, I would not. Someone's been lying to me.
Yeah, it's the next D'Souza. One last question. And we usually go here because the big lie continues that black voters started voting for Democrats in the 60s because of civil rights. It wasn't. It was the 30s and 40s, economically speaking, even though FDR lied to them and they weren't even included in the New Deal. Having said that, you've got black voters today. Some numbers say 20 to 30% supporting Donald Trump. Barack Obama got 98% of the black vote. If Donald Trump even gets 15 or 20, this is over for Democrats, isn't it? And why are they doing that? The economy, right?
Well, I think that blacks are realizing something very important, and that is that, first of all, politically, Trump doesn't need him. He wasn't elected with the black vote. Blacks are not an important constituency in the Republican Party. So if Trump campaigns on a black agenda, if he has black summits, if he invites processions of blacks to the White House, he's doing this not because he needs them politically, but because he cares about them.
Yeah.
He wants to see prosperity in the inner city. And I think this is dawning on blacks, not so much the sort of black establishment, which is already dug in for the Democrats, but the ordinary guy on the street. And so what I see on social media is just innumerable African-Americans who you'd never see in a Republican event, come close to a Republican event, nevertheless, not just favorable to Trump, but enthusiastic for Trump, crazy about Trump. And I think that we're going to see the numbers reflected when it comes election day.
And it's going to scare the heck out of Democrats for years to come. Dinesh D'Souza, great author, great movie maker. Go check him out at Dinesh D'Souza. His new movie coming out in the summer, United States of Socialism. Go and see and read Death of a Nation. Dinesh, thanks a million. Best to Debbie.
My pleasure.
I always appreciate having Dinesh on. Great education, great information. Check out everything that he's ever done. Book or movie form, you're going to get a great deal of education and entertainment out of it. 1-800-501-7080, joepags.com. Coming right back. Lots going on, not a ton of time left. I did want to give you my my Pags parody, and I did two of them. Michael, have you got an opinion which one you want to hear again? I've got Soleimani, then I've got the Waddler. Soleimani, all right. This is a song that was suggested that I use, the Italian traditional song, because it sounds so much like Soleimani, O Solomio. But O Solomio is more traditional, more orchestral. I decided to use It's Now or Never by Elvis, which was based on O Solomio. And this is the Pags parody, O Soleimani. Oh, yes. The dastardly guy is gone. Come on. Does mourn you, you disgusting killer, Omar and Bernie, say you were a pillar, you spent a lifetime waiting for the right time to attack us, that's why it's just you're dead. That's how we do the Pags parody, O Soleimani. A little something-something for you on the weekend. It's 1-800-501-7080. JoePags.com. Don't have a ton of time. It's going to be line one, Cletus in Colorado. What's going on? Hi.
Yes, sir. I have a question about Joe Biden.
Yeah.
I can't figure out why the Republicans don't go after him more. I mean, they got him on tape admitting what he did and bragging about it. And I also know that there's more than just Biden. Pelosi's son, Schumer's got somebody there. John Kerry's got somebody there. They've all got their hands in the cookie jar, and the cookie jar is Ukraine. And the only thing that I can even come up with is why they won't do it is maybe there's also a Republican or two that's got their hands in the cookie jar there, too.
Well, I mean, if they did, I think the Democrats would have exposed it by now. When it comes to Biden specifically, I would have to think they're trying to wait to see if he's going to be the nominee. I don't really know why they're not going after him harder. You're right. It's on tape. He actually admits that he held $1 billion back unless they fired somebody for him. That somebody happened to be investigating the company his son was working for, a son that had no knowledge of that business, yet he was making $83,000 a month, Hunter Biden. So I don't know why they're not going after him more, unless, of course, they're holding off in the hopes that this guy gets the nomination. And if he does, they can use it against him then. That's all I can think of. I appreciate the phone call. I was going to give you the phone number again. We're just about out of time. I appreciate you taking the time. Keep in mind, Monday through Friday, it's the Joe Pags Show. Just go to my website, joepags.com. You'll see where you can listen to it. The live video stream is there all week as well. I always appreciate hanging out with you on the weekend. We will be back next week. It's Michael on the board. It's Pags. We'll see you next week. Have a great weekend. Bye.
This is The Weekend with Joe Pags.